pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Thank you.
And to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening. This is Inside the Muslim World with Andrew, right here on the Radio Jihad Network, broadcasting to you today, this Tuesday evening, on April 23rd, 2013. For those of you tuning back in, it's a pleasure to be with all of you. My name is Andrew Bizad. I'm the author of Lions of the Faith, Saints, Blessings, and Heroes of the Catholic Faith and the Struggle with Islam. You can read more about me, my work, and my book at www.lionsofthefaith.com. You can also purchase my book there. And for those of you who've tuned in before and haven't purchased it, I suggest you get a copy because it is the first ever book to describe the struggle with the Muslim world as lived through the great men and women of the Christian faith, and specifically the Catholic Church. Again, as one of the greatest Muslim scholars from the 15th century, Ibn Khaldun once said, concerning Christians and Jews, "We will not further blacken the pages of the particular book he was writing with discussion of their doctrines of unbelief. In general, they are well known. All of them are unbelief. It is not for us to debate with them, but for them to decide between conversion to Islam, payment of the poll tax, the jizya, or death." You know, last week we had some very unfortunate news in the United States, and I'm going to stick with this topic for most of the show, simply because of the relevance, and we're going to go into it a little bit more than perhaps most of our news has been doing. This is the Boston bombers. Now, there was very speculation about what had happened, and I intentionally did not cover that last week for that very reason. You know, something that's very easy in any subject is to simply get carried away with any one particular topic and to start making presumptions without really having enough information. Although one may suspect something. Now, I certainly had my suspicions, and they've so far all been proven to have come true, more so than even I have imagined, which is good. I certainly have no complaints about that. However, it was good to always wait a little bit, because you never know what might change. So, here's the situation. Boston, two guys, Tamerlane and Jokhar Tsarayev. Chechens, which, for those of you who don't know, Chechnya is a small republic in the south of Russia that borders the countries of Armenia and Georgia. A little bit of background information. The area where Chechnya is known as the Caucasus Mountain region, hence the term Caucasian. It's believed that some of the original Caucasian people originally migrated from this area into Iran and India and others into Europe, hence the term Caucasian race and so on. What's interesting about the Caucasus Mountain area is that this has always been a hotbed of fighting between Christians and Muslims, and this goes back to the earliest days of Islam and to Islamic history. You see, what makes this area particularly unique is, if you look at this particular region, it's very mountainous. It's in the eastern side of Turkey, it's in Armenia, Georgia, and part of Iran, and a very small country of Azerbaijan. And what happened is you had a lot of various tribes that settled into this area, similar to what happened in Afghanistan. For those soldiers who've been over in Afghanistan, they describe one tribe will control one valley, and the next valley is controlled by another tribe, both of which speak very different languages, have different cultures, and neither one really wants to talk to the other one, and they'll fight each other perpetually, and have been doing so for centuries. Very similar situation in the Caucasus. You had many tribes that were originally pagans. Some of them became Christians. Other tribes, when Islam came, eventually converted to Islam. And while it doesn't have the same kind of isolationism that you have in Afghanistan, it's still very divided. You have small groups with their little territorial holds, and they're not willing to let go. There are a series of approximately five republics that are located along that very tiny border in the south of Russia between the Caspian Sea and the Black Sea. There are Cherkessia, also known as also known as Circassia or Cherkasy, Northern Ossetia, Southern Ossetia, Dagestan, Ingushetia, and Chechnya. Dagestan, Ingushetia, and Chechnya are all heavily Muslim. Cherkassia is only part Muslim. It's mostly Orthodox. And Northern and Southern Ossetia were Muslim, but have now become mostly Orthodox. And that's primarily due to Russian efforts to attempt to Russify the area during the 19th century, specifically by getting the Islamic presence out by moving Slavic Russians into the area, helping them to relocate, and then setting them up with presence, the idea of mixing with the populations, and ultimately de-Islamizing the area. Now, Chechnya is a particularly interesting case because this Chechnya, again, is a very small country, and Chechnya has always had a long history of Islamic rebel activity. And this history goes back to the 16th century. You see, one of the interesting points with Russian history is that the Russians, for a very long time, were actually ruled by the Mongolians. This pertains to the Mongol conquest of the 13th century. And what happened is many of the Mongols eventually converted to Islam. And for a very long time, they controlled most of the area of Russia over the Urals and many parts of Russia. Even most of Ukraine was controlled by Muslims, by Muslim Mongols for centuries. And around the year 1550, Russians in northern Russia, the area of what's today the cities of Nizhny Novgorod and later Moscow, began attempting to convert these people. The Orthodox started sending out missionaries. The first major city they hit was a place called Kazan. It's right over the Urals. It's considered one of the gateways to Siberia. Today, it's still a very Muslim city. However, there's a very strong Orthodox presence, and this is a place where the missions began. This is in northern Russia, though. Eventually, the missions went completely far east and went south and into the areas of the Chechen Republics as well as the Stan countries, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkestan, and so on. The Chechens never really took to the missionaries very well. They never converted, and they always were very opposed to the Russians in every way, both religiously and politically. And so as early as the 16th century, you start seeing records of Chechens leading suicide attacks or military assaults against the Russians. And it's still going on. This has been, 460 years at this point? But consider also that the Spanish Reconquista alone, the actual military fighting part, lasted 781 years. So really, it's not all that far along in terms of the greater scheme of history. That said, the Chechens, though, always put up a fierce resistance. Even in some of the romantic and Western European literature of the 18th and 19th century, you can see discussion about the Chechens in various areas using various different names. But various authors are talking about stories pertaining to the Caucasus region and so on, and conflicts with the Russians and the native peoples who live there. Now, these conflicts continued on. And then you have 1917, you have the Russian Revolution. The Soviets come in, and what they do is they want to put an end to most religious practice. Obviously, the Orthodox and other Christians suffered very greatly. The Jews and Judaism were forcibly suppressed, and so was Islam. The Chechens, however, did not go peacefully. So what the Russians did is they forcibly relocated the Chechens to Siberia, and they banned them from practicing Islam, at least publicly. Now, as we know, many of the Orthodox and many of the Jews continued to practice their religions in secret, as well as did many of the Muslims with Islam, and so on. So when the Soviet Union fell in 1991, what happened is the Russian government decided that it was going to make up for what happened with the Chechens, and they decided to relocate them back to Chechnya. Yeah, as a gesture of kindness and goodwill, showing that we're trying to make some kind of amends for what happened during the Soviet times under Stalin. So they relocated them. And what was the first thing that happened? The jihad returned immediately. Now, I'm not saying anything that anybody did is right or wrong. I'm not making any judgments or conclusions about it. What I am saying, though, is that immediately following the Chechens' restoration by the Russian government to their ancestral homeland, the jihad's immediately restarted. And they've been going ever since. And they've only grown. and it's now spread very much into the areas of Dagestan, Ingushetia, and so on. Whereas in the past, it was there, but it wasn't necessarily as aggressive. Now, bringing me to my next point. These two guys, Tamerlane and Jokhar. Jokhar, I know, is a Turkish name. But Tamerlane, though, that's a very interesting choice. Because Tamerlane was a very famous jihadi from Islamic history. If you look up his history, the name is also known as Timur. And classically, Tamerlane is spelled T-A-M-E-R-L-A-N-E, whereas in this case, the Russian fellow spelled it T-A-M-E-R-L-A-N. But Tamerlane was a Central Asian Muslim conqueror. He's from the country of what is today Uzbekistan. And what he did is he began a jihad in the 14th century, coming down from Central Asia, going across all the Middle East. He conquered Iran, what is today Iran, parts of Pakistan, most of Turkey. Believe it or not, the Ottoman Empire almost fell because of Timur's attacks. And it was because of Timur that the Ottoman Empire actually was forced to draw its attention away from Eastern Europe, and what prevented the earlier conquest of Eastern Europe and the fall of Constantinople by the Turks, because they were so preoccupied with Tamerlane. Tamerlane was also very, very vicious. He was vicious to everyone and anybody who opposed him, Muslim or not, but he had a particular dislike and hatred of non-Muslims. And what he would do when he went into an area, a non-Muslim area, is he would ask the city to submit to him and, you know, convert to Islam. And if they did not, he would execute everybody in the city by having their heads cut off, even the animals, and then he would take the severed heads and build piles, pyramids, outside the cities, showing what happens to those who oppose him. And this is what one of these bombers is named after. Again, it's the name of a jihadi, the name of a terrorist. There's no accident how his parents picked that. Jokhar, this is a Turkish word. I'm not familiar with it. I'm sure it has some significant meaning. That right away, I couldn't tell you what it is simply because I do not speak Turkish formally. And the Chechens, I should also add, are very heavily influenced by Turkish culture simply because of their proximity to Turkey and the historic relationship they've had with the Ottomans. The Caucasus Mountain area was a continual point of fighting between the Persians and the Ottomans, even during the 15th and 16th centuries. So the cultures there were heavily formed by this conflict. Now, turn to what happened in Boston. Take a look at it. There's a whole media campaign, it seems, right now, that's trying to deny any connection between the religion and the actual actions. The media is trying to say, the mainstream media, that is, that these men were, quote, radicals, that they were influenced by their own ideas, that they were not liked by their Muslim communities, and that they were prone to violent outbursts and prone to erratic behavior and so on. The whole idea that you get, if you look at all these different arguments that are being put out, and there have been many more that have been proposed in the media, but the idea is to say that these Muslim men were somehow extremists. These guys did this because they followed some, quote, extreme form of Islam, that they were not acting in concordance with Islam really teaches, and that, as Martin Bashir on MSNBC recently said, that they forgot the, quote, peaceful teachings of the Quran. I find it kind of ironic because there are no peaceful teachings in the Quran in effect, because any passage that had been peaceful was abrogated by the later sayings of Muhammad. This is known as abrogation theology, also called Nasch, and you can read about N-A-S-K-H, and you can read about it significantly online. The most significant one is قَتَلُوا الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُوا بِاللَّهِ وَلَا يُؤْمِنُوا بِالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ. Fight those who believe not in Allah, nor the last day. And the passage goes on to say, those who practice what Allah and His Messenger have forbidden, make them pay a grievous tax until they themselves feel subdued. So this is the Quran, chapter 9, verse 29. There are many other passages, too, that say this. Or from the Hadith, the Islamic sacred tradition, one of my favorite sayings, أُمِرْتُ لِقِتَالِ كُلُّ النَّاسِ كَتَ يَقُولُ لَا إِلَّهَ إِلَّ اللَّهُ وَمُحَمَّدٌ رَسُولَّهُ. I have been commanded to fight against mankind until they keep professes that there is no God but Allah and he and Muhammad is his prophet, which is, as Islamic theology teaches, that phrase, La ilaha illallah wa Muhammadun Rasulullah, there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is his prophet, is what one says to convert to Islam, therefore being until all man converts to Islam. So we go back to these Boston bombers. There's nothing heterodox about what they did. That's what no one wants to talk about. The idea of extremism unto itself, implies something extreme, something that is outside of the normal. For instance, most people who run, for example, who are runners of exercise, they run somewhere in the range of 2 to 5 miles for a run. Someone who runs 25 miles for an average run every time, that is an extreme example. He is outside the norm. Extreme, outside of boundaries. The very idea in Arabic, the word extreme, is ghulat. That which transcends what is normal, which goes beyond, usually in a bad way, what is normal. In Islam, however, as I've mentioned many times before, the human dignity is conditional upon belief and in practice of Islam. Non-Muslims do not possess the same human dignity as Muslims. Thus, Islam does not require them to be mistreated, but it simply permits for it. Sort of like a stock option. You don't have to execute it if you have it. But if you do execute it, it's perfectly legal, and you have every right to do so, and no one can tell you not to execute it. Same with violence in Islam. Non-Muslims do not have to be mistreated. Non-Muslims do not have to be killed. There is no stipulation that they must be murdered. However, the option to murder them is there. And that is where the confusion happens. People think that they look at Islam and Muslims and say, well, I know a Muslim who is such and such who would not do that. Now, aside from the fact that people are people and will do what they will, which I should say, no human action can change what someone believes to be absolutely revealed truth. The fact remains that Islamic teaching is what it is. And for someone who believes and does practice, all that person has to do is choose of his own free will to realize Islamic teaching. And then, that's when you see the violence. That's when you see the terrorism. That's when you see the hatred of non-Muslims. And that is what happened in Boston. Jokar and Tamerlane were normal Muslims. And many people have said they actually, for a long time, they were very secular Muslims. And by the way, I should add, there is no such thing as a secular Muslim. Just like there's such a thing as a secular Catholic, or there's a secular Buddhist, or a secular Jew. Now, many people will talk about Judaism, for instance, also having an ethnic component to it, but I'm speaking solely in terms of religion. You can't be a secular so-and-so, or such a this. You either believe or you don't. It's not hard. If you don't believe, you don't believe. That's fine. Don't call yourself that. Then don't call yourself whatever religion you affiliate with. And it's okay to do that. But there is no such thing as a secular Muslim. It cannot exist. It's a nonsensical idea. It's like talking about pigs flying or pink unicorns. They're there in fantasy, not in reality. And there's never been any evidence to suggest they could exist. If anything, the only kind of extremism that you have in Islam are the Muslims who say, I don't believe in the violence against non-Muslims. The violence is wrong. I don't believe that we should engage in execution of those who criticize Muhammad. I don't believe in what the Quran says in this area. I don't believe that Muhammad was the perfect man. That is extremism because it is outside of the norm. It is outside of what is commonly accepted. It is outside of conventional practice. Now then, when you look at Tamerlane and Jokar, these men were Orthodox Muslims. There are rumors that there was a fellow named Misha, which is a very common Russian name. This is, you know, it is almost as it's like a almost as common as a John that you'd hear, like a Johnny, that he influenced them to practice their Islam more perfectly. Because before this, everybody said this Tamerlane and Jokar were very regular guys. They had a lot of friends. They used to hang out and do all kind of activities. But until they met this guy who taught them more about Islam, they never had any interest, at least outwardly, of engaging in terrorism or killing non-Muslims. Now, whatever Misha said, we don't know yet. Hopefully, we'll be able to get some more elucidation in the coming weeks as this investigation continues. The fact is, though, it was this desire to practice Islam deeper. These men are already affiliated with Islam, and they were extremists by the fact that they did not believe it at the time. But it was when they became Orthodox, when they started practicing their Islamic faith, that this turn happened, that they started to become more withdrawn, more aggressive. They started to wear Islamic garb more in public. They started to do things and affiliate themselves with people that would be with other Muslims that wanted to fight against the United States, and so on. The only difference with Tamerlane and Jokar, as opposed to other Muslims who may feel the same way, is they chose to act on the teachings. They're really no different than anybody else. The only difference was their will, and they chose of their free will to fulfill the teachings of their religion. It's not that hard to understand. It's very simple. And that goes for every other Orthodox Muslim. It's a matter of fulfillment, a matter of embracing what the religion already teaches. Ask yourself, what would Muhammad have done in this situation? Would Muhammad approve of their actions? They did it fi sabilillah, for the cause of Allah. Their actions were consistent with Islamic theology. Their actions were consistent with actions that Muhammad did. Muhammad would approve. And every Orthodox Muslim knows this. Speaking of that, I'd like to take you to an interesting little piece of discussion. Now, something a lot of people may not know about me is I speak, read, and write fluent Russian. And these men are obviously Russians, and they're from Chechnya. And Chechnya, as I mentioned, has a long history of jihad and supporting terrorists. Now, there's a website, I mentioned it before, it's called kavkazcenter.com, kavkazcenter.com. You can go there, it is the official Islamic terrorist news agency for Chechnya, and it documents in extensive detail the various terrorist activities that happen against the Russians in the Caucasus region, and does so with great joy and excitement. They have several different languages you can read in. You can read it in Arabic, Ukrainian, Turkish, English, or the native Russian. What's very interesting is the difference between the English and the Russian, especially in light of what's going on. For instance, I'm going to go right here to the English webpage, kavkazcenter.com. You see it says news, facts, analysis. I click the English. You get an article that comes up. It says, could Chechen puppet leader Ramzan Kadyrov, who is a various Chechen rebel leader, organize the bombings in Boston? Why not? It has a section here about Russian terrorists, what they are referring to the Russian government, doing things in different countries, bad Russians. It's Obama, a communist agent of the KGB, all kind of crazy stuff. Now, and there's another thing here, opinion, is the Western media is quick to demonize the entire Chechen ethnicity and so on. If you look at this, there's very little actual discussion of what would seem to be terrorist activities. And I can tell you that having read Kavkaz Center a lot, because once again, it's a great news. It's not good what they do, what they promote, but it's a good place to keep track of various terrorist activities that are happening in the world. There's a lot of their very pro-terrorist sayings in English have been scrubbed. They're not there anymore. However, if you go to the Russian page, it's the first link, where it says Ruski, and you read, I'm going to read you a little bit of an article right here. The first article on the top of the page says, translated into English, and this is my translation we're given right now. Actually, the Russian says, Itagavaya svodka jihadovi imarati Kavkaz Zaglod 2012, which the report is a complete report of the jihad in the emirate of the in the Kafkaz emirate for the year of 2012, and also gives the Islamic year of 1433. If you click on it, it also links to a website called ummanews.com, which is another caucus website, and you'll see a big picture on it that says Emirat, which is emirate, over the Caucasus region with the black flag of Islam, Muhammad's sword, where it says La ilaha illallah wa Muhammadun Rasulullah. There's no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. And the report gives in explicit detail, it's probably about 20 pages long, I haven't had a chance to redo the whole thing, but it gives a breakdown of every single state in the Caucasus area within Chechnya and surrounding Chechnya of every single terrorist attack that Chechens have carried out against Russian citizens, against Russian government, and against, as they said, infidel Muslims and infidel Slavic people in that area. A systematic breakdown, hundreds of terrorist attacks it lists, in gleeful description, I can tell you from reading it. I'll go back again to the heavy hit of the Kafkaz Center. Next article right down. Zavishanye Amira Saifullah Anzura Astim Nirva Shaheed Inshallah. And it means the defense of the Emir Saifullah, Sword of Allah, Anzur Astimirov, a martyr, inshallah, if Allah wills. And it goes on. There are many other articles. There's a whole series of articles about the Boston bomber interviewing the mother of them, Zubeda Tsarnaeva. There's an analysis right here about Saudi Arabia, about is Saudi Arabia an Islamic state? More information about the problem, and so on. The point why I'm saying this is that this is a perfect example of what is called taqiyya in Islam, deception, for the sake of Allah. In one hand, we show on the English website a modified version of reports trying to play down or play up certain aspects of what we want to talk about. And then you see in the native language the real things that are happening. Yes, it is true that Arabic is the, quote, language of Islam. However, because of this area of the world where these people are based, their native language is really, they'll say Chechen, but it is really Russian. Because only people who speak Chechen are Chechens, and the language is in decline anyway in the region. Everybody talks in Russian. But you can see in the Russian, in this case, the exact words that are being used, the exact glee when it comes to talking about terrorism, the exact glee when it comes to talking about violence against non-Muslims. It's very clear. Most people won't be able to read it because it's in another language. The fact is it's there, and that's the problem. No one wants to talk about that. And the reason why is it doesn't fit the dialogue that's being promoted, specifically by our media, by the people in it who align themselves with a progressive and really a communist mindset. Speaking of communists, I should mention that we talk about Russia and communism and so on. Pam Geller at Atlas Shrugged's blog, www.atlasshrugged.com, has pointed out that the Russian intelligence had told the FBI a very long time ago to watch out for these guys because they were involved in terrorist activities, and that they should do something about it. And our government did nothing. We did nothing about it. It's no surprise. But still, there is a degree of complicity in this. If not material complicity, moral complicity. Because we know what goes on. But this goes into a bigger problem. The Boston bombing has exposed this. It came out in 9/11, and it will continue to come out as long as our government continues to go on this path. And the path is very simple. That around the year 1990, I think it was a book, I think the name was Dora Gold, I'm forgetting the exact name of the author, but it was a book about the change in American foreign policy, how we regard it with dealing with other countries. And the change was that religion was no longer allowed to be mentioned as a cause of discontentment among various peoples. not just for Islam, but for anybody. Religion was no longer factored into it. Rather, the only thing you'd factor in would be economic motivations, political motivations, or social motivations. Now, this in itself is a philosophy that is Epicurean, it is materialistic, and it is ultimately a socialist-communist philosophy. Because the basis of all these teachings is that man is merely an animal who is influenced by his external surroundings. And therefore, he strives to increase his material situation as much as he can for material purposes to his own benefit. It denies the role of any spiritual motivation. For instance, somebody blows himself up in a bus. People say, why would he do it? He says, I did it for my 72 virgins because Allah promised me them. People say, that's crazy. It is, but it's not. Because if you actually believe in what Islam says, and you believe that if you die fighting for the cause of Allah, that you're going to get 72 virgins when you die, and you're sincere about it, and you're going to have all these kind of great rewards in the afterlife and so on and so forth, well, that's your reason for doing what you did. You didn't do it for yourself. You did it for yourself in one sense, but you did it because there was this reward that Allah promised you. And you did get it. You will get it if you do this. Why didn't the Boston Bombers did what they did? No reason to blow yourself with the Boston Marathon. Kill little kids. Kill runners who are unrelated, who don't even know about Islam, don't even care about you, and probably would vote for people who would push policies that would support you. Push policies in favor of causes that you would support, I should add. So why do it? Because this is what because you have a religious motivation. You're motivated by your faith. Your faith is telling you to do this. Allah is telling you to do this because this is the theology. I mentioned there are people who are extreme in every religion, in every group. There are idiots in every group. You can't run from them. You can't hide from them. It's the story of the human race. They'll always be there. It's a fact of life. Deal with it. But this is more than just idiocy with these men. This is more than just a simple case of extremism. This is a case of orthodoxy. Of orthodoxy, according to Islam, lived out. That's what we're watching. And that's what nobody wants to talk about. Because it would disrupt that notion. It would undermine the quote, political, animal, materialistic philosophy that our media and many people, unfortunately, who are in positions of power in our country subscribe to. Completely undermine it. It would prove them wrong. It would be not just a... It could not just be the end of their careers, but it would also be embarrassing for them. So we continue to persist in it. The terrorist attacks aren't going to stop. There's no end to this. The violence in Islam will never end. They're here. They live among us. You know, I was reading about history. And Mao Zedong made a very wise comment about fighting guerrilla wars. He said, and it's been proven to be true by people who study military history and so on, Mao Zedong was right in this, that it takes approximately 100 people, or as he said, I think it was 100 families, to support one guerrilla fighter. That ratio hasn't changed. That goes for anything. Regardless of what religion you subscribe to, regardless of what culture, regardless of wherever position you have. 100-to-1 ratio. Now, these two guys, there weren't just two of them. They said there were 10 more planning terrorist attacks. So 12 guys in total. That's 1,200 people that were backing them, either directly or indirectly. Either directly giving them aid in some way, maybe helping them build things, get materials ready, or indirectly, spiritual support, moral support, giving them money, maybe a place to live, connections with friends, so on. 1,200, there are 1,200 other people, other Muslims, who are complicit in this attack. And that's the other problem that we don't want to under, that we don't understand. And I say our country. We look at the guys who did the attack as being the bad guys. And they are. They did do something horrible. You can't deny that. It's very clear. They're directly tied to it. Now, I certainly don't want to say we need to go out and find 1,200 people and arrest them, or that we're going to be able to get them, or that we could even make a direct, measurable, solely evidence-based tie to indict them. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying, though, is we need to have an acknowledgement that because of the religious nature of Islam, because of the theological, the spiritual motivations that they had and that are shared by the rest of the Muslim community, there were at least 1,200 other people backing these guys. Real people that live among us, neighbors, maybe friends, maybe even for some people who have converted to Islam, family. People that you know, the guy down the street, who knows? This is an issue of awareness, not paranoia, but awareness of the serious nature of how these kinds of battles are fought, the science behind them, the science that has been used throughout history, and a knowledge of how the theology, how the things of the past, the teachings of old that are regarded as absolute truth by these people are just as relevant today as they were in 622 in Mecca, Saudi Arabia. They are just as relevant when Muhammad was walking around as they are right now. There is no change. There's nothing new under the sun. I should say, with Islam's case, under the moon. Nothing changes. Human nature remains consistent. People remain consistent. These Boston bombers, there's nothing unique about them. They're just average Muslim guys. The only difference was they chose to live out the teachings of their religion. That is what makes them unique. That is what makes them special. You know, it is, people say they find this depressing. They find this scary. They don't know what to do. How are we going to deal with the future? What does it hold? I can't tell you what it holds. I guarantee nothing. What I can say, though, is that one of the most important things that you can do in order to combat Islam is, or I should say the influence of Islam, is to know what they believe. Understand it well. And it's very easy to do. Let's pick up a copy of the Quran and read it. Or a copy of the Hadith and read it. Or if you need it, there are plenty of good books out there. That's why I wrote Lions of the Faith, www.lionsofthefaith.com. Get the book. Read it. You can learn the lessons that from the saints, blesseds, and heroes of the Christian faith, of the Catholic Church, in the struggle with Islam, and see how they apply to today. And it's not just a push from my book. That is the truth. That is the reason why I wrote it. Because people need to see an example. They need to see that there are others out there, just like us, like you and me, regular guys living regular lives who were put into situations they didn't want, but were able to do something about it. Be able to arm themselves with knowledge and then with whatever other tools they needed to help their situation. And everybody's calling, everybody's vocation in this is different. You know, I walk around, I speak Arabic, I do Islamic studies. That is what I do. Not everybody is going to be able to learn Arabic and to study Islam like I have. I wouldn't expect anybody to. There's a lot more in this world than just Islam that one has to worry about. You know, we have children to feed. We have places to go, people to see. We have to pay our bills, to pay our taxes. A lot of people just won't care about what we have to say. That's all okay. You know, let every man go about his own way, if that's what he wants. But I have a responsibility. This is what I do in this area. You have a responsibility too. Whatever it is, it's up to your case to discern it. I'll give an example of one person from my book. Her name was Santa Maria de Cervellón. She was a Spanish woman from the 13th century. And all that she did was she prayed for people. Yep, that's it. Nothing more. She just prayed for people who were going to the Muslim world to ransom Christians who were enslaved by Muslims from captivity. Just prayed. She never went. She never did anything that we would consider great. Never went to, and never fought any wars, never made any converts, never went out. You know, not someone that we would call impressive in terms of at least worldly accomplishments. Her body remains incorruptible. She was interned at the Minor Basilica, of the Mercedarian Order in Barcelona, Spain. Incorruptible for 800 years. That was her calling, just to pray. Little calling for us here, but it was big in what she was able to do. And again, there's more things than just that. There's people who were warriors, some people who were martyrs, some people who were scholars, some people who were just great thinkers, some people who were able to help others, some people who were scientists. Everybody has his own way, has his own place. It's like a puzzle. If every piece were the same, it would make only one part of a picture, and then there would be no actual image, the mosaic of, it's the mosaic of little pieces that comes together to create something great. And yet it's all individual and all unique. Look at a stained glass window sometime. Every little piece of glass is unique and special in its own way. But together with other pieces, it makes something even greater. That's what we have. That's what we can offer. That's what we have to do. And it's your job to find your place. There's many ways you can go about doing this. I know that I like to pray. I try to listen. It's something that's not easy for me, I admit. It's not easy. I don't believe it's easy for most people. But it has to be done. Because you see, these two guys, Jokhar and Tamerlane, they'll go to federal prison. So will these other 10 guys. Most likely they will. I mean, anything can happen today. They'll be locked away in a cell somewhere, thrown away, key thrown away, disappear. People will forget about them in a little bit of time. Their names will just pass into history. Their actions won't. Their actions will stay. And they will inspire others. And then there will be another one. And another one. And another one. There will be different kinds of bombers. There will be different terrorists. And some of them may get put away. But the idea won't die. Islam will not die. There's a saying, "Mort min elf qitar," death by 1,000 cuts. It is an Islamic saying, but we should take heed to it, because that is how America will fall if we do not respond. I need to make sure I preface that conditionally, because I do not want the fall of this country. I don't want the fall of Europe. I don't want to see anybody fall to Islamic rule, because it's a horrible thing. It's a fate worse than death. Because death ends. Enslavement under Islam does not. Because you may die, but it stays with your children, and their children, and their children, and their relatives, and their children, and their children. And it doesn't end. It just repeats. And the next thing you know, you go from being the enslaved to the terrorists, and your enslavement, your descendants, and your grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren, 10, 20, 30 generations out, are now the new suicide bombers. What do you think happened to all the people of the Middle East that were once Christian? Their descendants are now the suicide bombers and mass murderers of today. For Islam, the same religion their ancestors disagreed with, or fought against, or perhaps did not fight against, because they thought they could negotiate. Nothing ever changes, my friends. It's your responsibility to do something now, because if you don't, they will. As a Muslim missionary I knew once said, we cannot think about conquering the United States in 2 or 3 generations, but we need to think about 20 and 30 generations from now, what we want to see. If you want to do something, if you want to prevent this fate from coming to this country, get my book, Lions of Faith, Saints, Blessings, and Heroes of the Catholic Faith and the Struggle with Islam, www.lionsofthefaith.com. Folks, Thank you for listening. God bless you all. I will see you next week right here on the Radio Jihad Network.